situation. So if he could please give me his mercy, and the Vaishnavas could please give me their mercy, I will continue, shameless rascal that I am. Part 1, Chapter 6, Priyatama, the most beloved. Uddhava is now made a shocking statement. Yes, because in each case when the Vaishnavas have been praised by Narada Muni in this book, up until now, they have immediately rejected the praise. Immediately. No, no. I'm not like that. What are you saying? And they redirected the praise to someone they consider to be higher. This is the general plot of the Priya Bhagavatamrita, in which the intimate details of how devotees feel both about Krishna within themselves and about one another in their relationships, in their association. This is how we get the details. And then in the praise, in the refutation of the praise, which gets more and more subtle as it goes on, as the devotees become more and more elevated that Narada is talking to, and the praise becomes more and more subtle, the refutations, therefore, must become more and more subtle. So we are kind of inducted into a very sweet and elite company of all these great Vaishnavas, and how they feel about one another, and how they treat one another, and how they act towards one another. But now Uddhava, when he heard Narada Muni's praise of him, which was practically the highest praise, because his praise in essence was that Uddhava is so great, and of course he was in ecstasy, so he didn't see Uddhava sitting in front of him, but still he was praising Uddhava. He said, "You are so great that even Krishna says that you're more dear to him than even his brother or his wives or his special associates, and even more than his own body, even more than him himself." So this is the highest praise that you can give another person. "You're more dear to me than myself or my own body." So then Uddhava's response was, "Yes, I know that that's true, and it's always been true, and everyone else knows it is true also." And you know, it's shocking, actually, in a sense. And then Sananda Goswami, in his Digdarshini commentary, reveals that actually, when Uddhava said to Narada that he was the knower of everything, the knower of all truths, he was hinting that he knew that the greatest devotees were actually the Brajvasis, and that Srimati Radharani, as the head of the Brajvasis, was actually the greatest devotee. He doesn't come right out and say it. And anyway, we'll see that there's a kind of like a tussle back and forth to try to keep this subject from going forward, because out of kind of fear that the Dwarkavasis are going to become too much upset, or that it's going to make Krishna become even more upset. They're all outside Krishna's bedroom now, talking on the veranda. And while Krishna's, you know, slept in, and you know, he's upset, he's crying, and all these things. So then Sanatana Goswami reveals also that the reason that Uddhava said that is because he holds Narada in such high esteem. And this means that the more advanced we become in devotional service, the more we are, the higher esteem we are able to put other Vaishnavas in. And Uddhava is giving the example here that he feels so respectful to Narada that he can't refute what he says exactly. He can't directly say, "No, what you're saying is not true." Because Because he accepts him, as at the end of the last purport that we read, he accepts him as his Prabhu, or his spiritual master. The word Prabhu means spiritual master. Now there's a raging debate, you know, whether or not to call women Prabhu or Mataji, or, you know, there's some. And I was just reading the text, and I thought, because we're immature, and we've been calling each other Prabhu for all these years, the term Prabhu has become just like a handle, like a, you know, like a nickname you give people. Hey, Curly. You know. Hey, Prabhu. Hey, Fats. You know, hey, Prabhu. And as a result of that immaturity, you know, because we're not really realizing the depth of that meaning, or what to speak of the word Mataji, which actually puts the lady in a category of worship higher than Prabhu. Mata Datta Pitam. It's like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that one of the, you know, things that we do as an austerity is to worship senior, higher personalities like the mother and the father. So they're put in even a higher category, but because we're neophyte and we're always just so the same thing. We've been saying Mataji, Mataji, Mataji. So it's become like a handle, it's like a jingle, and we don't realize just what that means, and therefore our tendency to treat one another with disrespect, or to treat the women, you know, without the proper due respect as a worshipable, you know, personality like our mother, you know, has resulted in all of these, you know, misunderstandings and everything. So we would do well to take the examples of these great souls and learn how to treat one another properly according to our positions, and spiritually especially. Now we're going to hear an elaboration by Uddhava where he does actually refute the praise of Narada, but in a very subtle way. So we'll start by reading text 24. Idanim yad vraje gatva kim apyan annabhavam tata mahaso bhagyamano me sasadyas chunatam gataha. What I saw on my recent trip to Braj took my pride in my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Commentary, Digdarshini. Uddhava cannot easily describe his impressions of Braj. Therefore, he simply says, what I experienced. Yat kim api anbabavam. Before he visited Braj, his pride in being favored by Krishna had been as great as Mount Meru. But when he saw the greater devotion of the Brajvasis, his pride was quickly reduced to a pile of dust. Now, we shouldn't think that that means that Uddhava is proud in the way that we are proud. Proud of being in a certain position. Arrogance. You know, Uddhava is not arrogant. In elevated souls, as we heard as we heard two verses ago in the end of the commentary, Uddhava also experienced a kind of jealousy when he thought about all the elevated Vaishnavas. He was thinking about the Vaishnavas and how wonderful they were, and therefore, you know, he first of all, you know, he stood up and embraced Narada's feet, and then he thought again, he became shy. And the reason he became shy is he was meditating on how great, you know, devotees are, and how they're all so great, and he became shy. He would not, like, put himself forward. Sometimes, if we find ourselves putting ourselves forward, it's a sign that there's something wrong, especially if there's a superior person in the room. If there's a superior person in the room and we put ourselves forward, then we should understand that we need to work on this, that perhaps our shyness needs to be worked on. You know, maybe our pride is maybe mixed with something else rather than, you know, the pure pride that Uddhava is exhibiting. Yeah, so two verses ago, it was described that, you know, Uddhava was feeling some jealousy, but the jealousy that he was feeling was not envy. It was not envious. It was not. It did, and the test of that, the way that's evaluated, is that it didn't cause anybody else distress. It didn't cause him distress, and it didn't cause a disturbance to anybody else. But this is the difference between the devotees who are proud of being Krishna's devotees. Really what they are is proud of Krishna. And really what they are, they may be proud of being the associates of exalted devotees of Krishna. So, you know, Uddhava is so intimate with Krishna. He's called upon Krishna to do such intimate things for him that he felt very proud of this. Not in a material way, but in a spiritual way. But even that pride, when he was sent by Krishna to Braj, even that pride was crushed to dust when he saw just how elevated the love and deep the love the Brajvasis had for Krishna was. He considered himself to have no love for Krishna compared to the Brajvasis. So it means that as we advance in devotional service, not only do we feel ourselves more and more humble, but we see other devotees as being greater than us, and we see their devotion and their devotional service and their love for Krishna as something very wonderful, something very appreciable and worshipable. So in this way he's saying indirectly that you should go to Braj, you know. And Narada's been going from one devotee to another, from one place to another, trying to find the devotees that have had that have received the most mercy of Krishna. And here he is in Dwarka with Krishna's family members, the most intimate relationships you can have, family members, materially. And Uddhava's now hinting that, no, you should go to Braj, but he doesn't want to come right out and say it. And of course we'll find out that Narada, he's pretty determined character. He oftentimes likes to act in such a way as to precipitate things, precipitate Krishna's, you know, appearance. To precipitate Krishna's appearance, he went to Kamsa when Kamsa was thinking everything's okay. He's saying, don't think Krishna, everything's okay. Actually, Krishna's there. He's taken birth already, and you know he's somewhere and he's out to get you. And don't worry. That caused Kamsa to imprison Vasudeva and Devaki and act in such an atrocious way, killing their children one after another, and this way precipitating, you know, Krishna's appearance, quickening it. He always wants to quicken things, get to the heart of the matter. So that's Narada Muni. So even though Uddhava is kind of trying to say these things very, very subtly, bringing up the subject matter of Braj very, very subtly, because he doesn't want to disturb Krishna more, and he doesn't want to, you know, disturb the queens of Krishna and Dwarka. So now he'll go on. Text 25. Tata eva hi krishnasya tad prasadasya chadbhutam tat premno pi maya gyata maduri tad vatam tata. Since then, I have understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, and of those who possess that love. This is a very, very instructive verse. That as we advance in devotional service and as we meet higher and higher devotees, our appreciation for the sweetness of Krishna's mercy and for what love for Krishna actually is, and for the position of those who actually possess that love, should appreciate. You know, sometimes in the material world they have what's called music appreciation classes, where you have a music class and then you appreciate the music by hearing the music, by associating, analyzing it, and, you know, dealing with it. You become more appreciative, you know. So, you know, what he's saying really is that, you know, he has a Vaishnava appreciation, you know, an appreciation of Vaishnavas, an appreciation of the love that they have for Krishna, and how wonderful it is, and how sweet it is, and how essential it is, and how much he wants it, and how much he wants to associate with that. And this is the secret for, you know, how to associate properly in a Vaishnava society. This is the secret. We can't associate properly in a Vaishnava society just on the basis of position, although that's important also. It's also important. But in a Vaishnava society, this appreciation of the sweetness of Krishna's mercy and of those who have received that mercy and love for Krishna and those who possess that love should become more and more prominent in our consciousness. And if it's going in that direction, even if it's just going in that direction, then whatever anomalies are there that come from living in the material world, because there are anomalies from living in the material world, no avoiding. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, every endeavor in the material world is full of fault. There's always something to see wrong if you're looking. And even when we have to act towards one another in positions of superior and subordinate, still, we should not lose that appreciation in a Vaishnava society. And that will help keep the things that we have to exchange and do with one another, with our subordinates, to train them and instruct them and correct them and protect them and all these things from abuse. When we emphasize the different social positions and relationships and how they are meant to be conducted in the Vedic culture without this conception, without this Vaishnava conception of just how worshipful Vaishnavas are, even if they are our subordinates in material relationship, it will result in abuse, or the tendency to abuse will be increased. But the more we actually see the position of the Vaishnava and appreciate how special it is, how special Vaishnavas are, that they've received Krishna's mercy, how special it is that a person can feel affection for Krishna as the Supreme Person, or what to speak of here, now they're talking about Supreme, just one's dear most bosom friend, or child, or lover. So after Uddhava met the Vrajbasis, the effect was just like two verses ago, he said the jealousy he was feeling, in that jealousy he entered even deeper into the trance of his attraction to Krishna. Just as devotees in the conjugal mood become even more blissfully attached to Krishna when jealous of his other lovers. So sometimes there may be competition even in the society of Vaishnavas, but to speak of Goloka Vrindavan. But that jealousy and that competition, is all meant to please Krishna. There's never any selfish motivation, and therefore causes people to go deeper, causes devotees to go even deeper into the trance of their relationship and attraction, for Krishna. And if that goal is not fixed, if it's not in the front of the mind, then the tendency to become distracted or influenced by the material qualities, your reflections, the perverted reflections of these emotions and sentiments will become overwhelming to the soul, because the soul is tiny and cannot resist, actually. Without Krishna's mercy, without the mercy of the Vaishnavas, without awakening the real symptoms of variety in relationship and in spiritual life, which include all these things, we will not be able to go forward. We will not be able to persevere in our effort to become better and better devotees. Text 26. Tadarshane naivakato hidhan tidhanyatam taryeva samyak pramunanukampitam tasya prasada Tishayas padham tata matvasam ananda bhraputo babam. Just by what I saw in Braj, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, the recipient of His most extreme mercy. So we heard a little bit yesterday about why would have felt like that, because you know he was being sent by Krishna on a very confidential mission to pacify, you know, to deliver his message to the Brajbasis and especially to the gopis, and to pacify their hearts, to relieve them from the intense pangs of separation that they were feeling from Krishna. But you know, when he got there and saw what was going on, then he realized even something deeper, and that was that Krishna sent him there so that he could learn, so that he could be elevated in his consciousness, so that he could learn what is actually advanced, pure, spontaneous, ecstatic devotional service, the deepest meanings of prema, the deepest display of prema. And of course we mentioned yesterday, as we mentioned, or day before yesterday, we mentioned that Krishna even had a, you know, Krishna is so intelligent. He does so many things at once. He never does just one thing. Whatever he does, symptom of a good manager. He does one thing and it accomplishes a lot of things. So Krishna is the supreme intelligent, the supreme manager, you know, so he managed it in such a way that Uddhava would become qualified to stay back when he left, to stay back on the earth when he left to go, when his mission was finished, so that he could go to Bhadraka Ashram, the only place that Krishna didn't go to give this wonderful understanding to qualified persons. And not everyone could understand what Krishna was doing. This is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why he had to come back again later on as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because not everyone understood. And he didn't, you know, give this love to just anybody and everyone like Lord Chaitanya did, like he did in his form of Lord Chaitanya. It's only by his mercy, actually, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, that we're able to even, you know, hear and even try to understand these things that are in this book. Anyway, so Uddhava was prepared by his visit in Braj for this very special mission to explain Braj Bhakti to personalities who were in Bhadraka Ashram, who were actually qualified by their austerities and devotional service. So here Uddhava is saying, I became most blessed because, you know, I thought, you know, this is extremely merciful. And I'm now the recipient of extreme mercy from Krishna. See? Krishna's mercy is unlimited, like everything else about Krishna. Krishna is unlimited. And everything about Krishna is unlimited. And his mercy is unlimited. So no matter how much mercy you receive, you can always receive more. And no matter how far you think you've gone, there's always somewhere to go. And when a devotee actually begins to just kind of pick up on this, even if just a little bit, even a drop of this understanding, can make him humble, you know, in the face of situations where he may be the senior person or the most elevated person in a certain situation, in a given situation. In the material world, the tendency when we're in a position where we're kind of the senior person or, you know, the highest person in ashram or, you know, whatever, age or seniority or whatever, you know, we may tend to forget, you know, what a humble position we actually are in relationship to Krishna and Krishna's great devotees. So, great devotees, they seek out the association of devotees more elevated than them and deal with them in a way that the mercy, the unlimited mercy of Krishna can come, you know, more and more. Text 27. Gayam yat abhilashata yat tato nutishtatam yat tat sarvesham suviditam mitak shakyate jnana bhaktum natva natva munibada maya prartase kakubhistvam tat tad vritta shavana rasatak samshaye tabiramam. Everyone here knows very well what I then sang in my ecstasy, what desires I had, and what I did. Better for now not to speak on these matters further. O best of sages, I bow down to you again and again, and I beseech you, please curb your eagerness to relish those various affairs. So now it's coming out. Uddhava's coming out a little bit more explicitly to Narada. Said, you know, just cool it. You know, don't go too fast, too far here, because we're going to create a scene. We're going to create a situation which, you know, you may regret. You know, we may be the cause of causing, you know, Krishna to go further into his state that he's in, that everybody's talking about what to do about, you know, what to speak of the people that are around you, how they're going to feel about pushing the envelope, you know, in this subject. And also he's, you know, elaborating a little bit on why he said that in the beginning that, yes, you know, this is self-evident. What you're saying about me is self-evident, because, you know, he actually did say these prayers, which we will hear about now in the commentary. He actually did say these prayers, and they are symptoms of exalted devotional service, and because he said them and everybody knew he said them, therefore, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, once the curtain's drawn, Prabhupada used to say, when, you know, you're up there to dance, and, you know, and the curtain's drawn and you're like shy, you know, like, oh, what can I, you know, you're up there, you got on the stage, the curtain's open, so go ahead and dance. That's what you're supposed to do, you know, so do it. So let's hear the commentary in this for Digdarshini. This is a wonderful, wonderful commentary. Uddhava's songs of ecstasy in Braj are recorded by Sri Shukadev Goswami in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Itak padam tanubrito bubi gopavad bho govinda eva nikilat mani rudh bhavaha vanchantitad bhavabiyo manayo bhayam cha kim brahma janma biranantakatarasasya. Among all persons on earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. Their pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmana, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Bhagavatam 10:47-58. Asam aho chadadarenu jusham maham syam vrindavane kimapi gulmalatau shidhinam yadushtyajam sajanam aryapatam sajadhitva bejur makunda padavim chutibir vigrimyam vimrigyam. The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members who are very difficult to give up, and have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. Therefore, anyone familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam knows very well what Uddhava said and did in Braj, and what confidential ambition he revealed there. It is no secret that Uddhava discovered in Sri Brajdham that the gopis, headed by Sri Radhika, are much more intimately favored by Krishna than himself. But in the present company, Jai Shishi Gornitai Kijai. But in the present company, Uddhava wanted to avoid pursuing these topics. Sri Satyabhama and other queens of Dwarka who were there might be displeased to hear the gopis' super excellence described. And Sri Krishna himself, being reminded of the gopis, might be driven into even worse distress. Narada, however, having come to Dwarka just to hear about the recipients of Krishna's greatest mercy, was intent on fulfilling his mission. Uddhava thus submitted to him a humble request that he bring his eagerness under control to avoid undesirable consequences. So this is a very, very deep commentary, because we know that, you know, there are two sides to this, you know. There's the understanding of how we should behave with one another, you know, meaning it's not that you just say anything to anybody at any time. Persons who are cultured, advanced in spiritual understanding, you know, learn by associating with advanced devotees and taking instructions from their spiritual master, and basically trial and error and practice, they learn how to behave. And it's not that, you know, you just say whatever comes into your mind just to anybody at any time. Cultured people, or to speak of cultured devotees, they don't do that. On the other hand, you know, we're dealing with a transcendental situation here that's beyond the ordinary etiquettes, you know. There's a lila unfolding here. Krishna's play is unfolding here, and what is on one level considered to be undesirable consequences, and is actually very desirable. You know, at the end of the book, when Krishna does become much more emotional as a result of hearing, you know, when the discussion goes deep, as we will hear in the next few days, as the discussion goes deeper and deeper into the effect that Krishna's disappearance, leaving Braj, had on the Brajvasis, you know, it did cause Krishna to go into a very extreme emotional state, and such an emotional state that the whole universe was affected. Even Lord Brahma was affected, the top of the universe. And he came to figure out what was going on. No one around him could understand what was going on. It was beyond them, above them. So anyway, there was a whole, we'll hear about it later, I don't want to tell too much detail, but, you know, there was a whole drama enacted in which Krishna was, you know, brought back to his kind of normal state by a whole series of events. And when that was over and Krishna had come back to Dwarka, to his palace from Navabrindavan, and he was sitting there explaining to everybody what had just happened and why, which is the deep conclusion of Briya Bhagavatamrita and of all revealed scriptures, Narada wasn't coming in. I mean, he wasn't there. So Krishna asked where Narada was, and when Narada, you know, finally came in, because Krishna said, well, Narada always comes here. And they said, well, he's embarrassed because he's caused a disturbance. And Krishna says, no, he didn't cause a disturbance. He allowed me to experience something more wonderful, the most wonderful thing I could experience. He's giving me this wonderful experience. Why is he upset? Or why is he shy? So, you know, in the spiritual world, things aren't always what they seem to be. It appeared to be, you know, an undesirable consequence and a lot of emotional turmoil and confusion and all these things. But actually, these were all enacted in order to give Krishna the highest transcendental pleasure. This is the difference between confusion caused in spiritual life in actual transcendental confusion and the confusion caused by our misbehavior or our immature behavior in spiritual life or even in material life. It isn't a cause for lamentation. It doesn't result in something inauspicious. Krishna's pastimes are all auspicious. And then he further, then Narada comes in, and then he explains this to Narada, that actually you've done me a great favor by allowing me to taste the feelings and the emotions that you've allowed me to taste just now. This is a very wonderful thing you've done. And then, of course, then he explains what apparent suffering in spiritual life is, which we'll get to later. But the other point he made to him was that, and you should know, that all the people you met, all the devotees you met from the beginning, the brahmana who was doing the sacrifice and worshipping in Shalagram Shila in the Ganga, the banks of the Ganga, all the way up to where we are now, and you know, every one of these persons are capable of delivering the universe. You should not think them higher or lower. You should not think them less significant or more significant. And in this way, he explained in a very, very deep way how to see the apparent hierarchies in spiritual life and spiritual existence, and at the same time not fall in the trap of discriminating in a material sense what is higher and lower. Very, very important points to assimilate and to realize in order to live in the spiritual atmosphere peacefully. So, okay. Now we'll go on. Text 28. Sri Parikshitubhacha Tadbhakya Tatvam Vigyaya Rohini Shastram Abravit Chidago Kulabhasena Tatratya Janasamata. Sri Parikshit said, because Rohini had long lived in Gokul, its residents held her in high regard. She knew the inner meaning of Uddhava's words. So with tears in her eyes, she decided to speak. Commentary, Digdarshini. Despite the precautions taken by Uddhava, there was no way to stop Krishna's intimate devotees from unintentionally turning their conversation toward the pure devotion of Braj. That the people of Sri Nanda Braj had exclusive possession of Krishna's mercy was an essential truth too irresistibly attractive to be kept covered. That the people of Nanda Braj had exclusive possession of Krishna's mercy was an essential truth too irresistibly attractive to be kept covered. So in material consciousness, we can't understand this statement. Not possible. How the residents of Braj can have exclusive possession of Krishna's mercy, when in fact, when you look carefully, you'll see that Krishna's mercy is going everywhere. So how can they have exclusive possession of it when Krishna's mercy is all obviously, you know, going everywhere? The philosophy that Lord Chaitanya taught, which was the culmination of the evolution of philosophy, you know, begun, you know, with Shankaracharya, absolute monism, and then we have scholars in the crowd, so if I make a mistake, please correct me. To Ramanuja and his Dvaita. What's the technical term, Gopi? Vishishta Dvaita. Madhvacharya came? Huh? Vashishta Advaita, and then Madhvacharya, which is Advaita, and then culminating Lord Chaitanya's Achintya Beda Tattva. So as the spiritual mind becomes uncovered, as the spiritual intelligence becomes, as the subtle body of the soul becomes uncovered, we are able to accommodate things in our minds that we can't when we're more conditioned materially. Material education, especially Western education, tends to teach us in a linear way of thinking. You know, one thing proceeding after another, proceeding after another, and everything is either right or wrong, it's black or white, you know, and this culminates in a reductionist scientific kind of way of thinking about things that, you know, but in spiritual life, a lateral kind of thinking, this Achintya Beda Beda Tattva was the extreme evolution of lateral thinking, where the mind can actually accommodate as being true simultaneously two things which are apparently contradictory. Subtle intelligence is required to understand these things properly. How the residence in Braj can be the exclusive shelter of, you know, Krishna's mercy, and at the same time, everywhere you look, you see Krishna's mercy manifested. Devotees in different ways, in different to different degrees, receiving their Krishna's mercy. This is beyond concept. Achintya, therefore, it's called Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, inconceivably one and different. So all the devotees are inconceivably one and different from one another. So this, in the last comment, the last sentence, is described that this is an essential truth. That this is not a light word. It's important. It's not just an adjective that's put in there just to make the purport more literary or interesting. It's actually a deep word, essential truth, meaning that, you know. Without understanding that the devotees of Braj, without understanding the position of the devotees of Braj and just how much Krishna loves them and how much they love Krishna, very difficult, you know, to actually understand anything, ultimately. In the deepest way. In the second part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a description of how when Krishna expands himself to go other places, he never leaves Braj, but he expands, his expansions leave Braj, and they go to different places, and they go do so many things. And there are other personalities who go with Krishna, who are there with Krishna to act as his mother and father and consort and friends and assistants, and so many. He always has associates around him helping him in his mission. And it's described in the second part of Bhagavatamrita that all those personalities are actually expansions of the original residence of Vrindavan, of Braj. Whenever Krishna personalities appear to take the position of parents of Krishna in any incarnation, There are expansions of Nanda and Yashoda who do that. Like that, we can understand just how exclusive the devotion of the residents of Vrindavan are. And it is so essential and it is so attractive, this subject, that the devotees on this level, you know, they can't resist. Once it gets into the atmosphere, once it starts, it's like they can't resist, you know. So now we'll hear what happens when personalities with different relationships with Krishna begin to discuss this essential truth. Text 29 and 30. Sri Rohinyuvacha Astan Sri Haridasa Tvam Mahadur Daiva Maritan So Bhagya Ghanda Rahitan Nismagnan Dhainya Sagare Nimagnan Dhainya Sagare Tat Tat Vada Babayash Archis Tapyabhanam Vishakulan Chana Chinta Sukinyame Maspite Padavimnaya. In case anyone thinks that all the residents of the spiritual world have to think alike, they should think again and listen carefully to this verse. Sri Rohini said, "Alas, dear servant of Sri Hari, the residents of Braj have by evil fate been all but slain. They have lost the last trace of good fortune and are drowning in an ocean of gloom. There they suffer, poisoned and scorched, in the flames of an underwater fire. So please, do not destroy my moment of happiness by reminding me of them." Commentary, Digdarshini. Only a person who is dear to Sri Krishna and has received his favor should be considered fortunate. The Brajbasis feel most unfortunate because they view themselves as totally neglected by Krishna. The pain of being deprived of Krishna's attention and personal company is like the inextinguishable Bhadava fire, which is said to burn within the ocean. Absence from Krishna brings the Vrajbasi's love for him to a fever pitch, which feels to them like the agony of being poisoned. Living in Dwarka, Rohini has been able to forget to some extent the misery of the Vrajbasi's, but now Uddhava is stirring her memories. When Uddhava mentioned the songs of ecstasy he sang in Braj, he was alluding, in particular, to the suffering of the gopis. But since Rohini is affectionate toward all the Brajbasis, here she has used the generic masculine pronoun tan, them. In the next two verses, she will express her special concern for Mother Yashoda. So, in the highest conception and in the highest love for Krishna, in the perfection of existence, it is not all one. It is not that, you know, everybody becomes a clone of Krishna or a clone of someone else and doesn't have individuality, doesn't have individual feelings and individual opinions and individual reactions to the different things that go on, even in the spiritual world. So Rohini, she was there. You know, she saw, you know, everything. She saw when Krishna was there. She saw the highest happiness, the highest manifestation of spiritual ecstasy manifest constantly when Krishna was living with the residents of Braj. And now she's in... and then when Krishna left, she stayed there. She didn't come until later. She'll explain that in another verse. She didn't come out until later. And so she was able to see firsthand the reactions of the Vrajvasis when Krishna left. And these reactions to from a certain angle of vision, they appear to be very, very extreme reactions, and even they seem to be pitiful or extreme conditions of suffering. Of course, the whole purpose of the last part of this book is to explain that those are not actually symptoms of suffering at all, that they're actually symptoms of the highest pleasure. And, you know, then Krishna goes on later to explain, you know, even from an external point of view, he didn't want to go back to Braj because everyone was trying to convince him to go back to Braj. But he wasn't going back, at least externally, because, you know, he saw that, you know, if I do, then, you know, they're going to get so excited, and then they're going to think, you know, of my going again, and then they're going to get even worse. You know, their emotional disturbance will get even worse. They say, why do I want to go there and cause them to? Of course, then there's the concept of, you know, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So how do you reconcile this? Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Well, that's reconciled by the fact that this uppercut aspect of Krishna's existence in Braj, which never leaves, which follows them, every devotee there, like shadow, follows an object, is in a sense misconceived by the Vrajvasis to be just dream. They experience, when Krishna is, when they're experiencing the personal, direct association of Krishna, they think it's just a dream. They think they're just dreaming. They don't accept it to be real. And that way they're able to be with Krishna and at the same time feel the extreme separation of Krishna that is there on the external plane. So this is this Bhadava fire that she's saying, this pain of being deprived of Krishna's attention and personal company for one who has had it is so extreme that it burns like the fire, the Bhadava fire. There's a fire inside the ocean. You imagine what kind of fire that must be if there's a fire that's burning and it's covered with, you know, tons and tons and tons of water, and it doesn't extinguish it, it just keeps on burning in the ocean. What a fire that must be. So the fire of separation from Krishna is like that. So Rohini, now there's going to be a discussion in which different devotees are going to express different feelings and different things, and they're going to take the sides of different devotees. Some of them are going to take Krishna's side. Some of them are going to take the sides of the Vrajvasis. Some of them are going to especially favor, you know, one group of Vrajvasis more than another. Now, Rohini is going to talk about Yashoda because, you know, she's mother. She's the mother of Balaram. Yashoda is the mother of Krishna. They're very close. They're very intimate, very close, because they have the same relationship. They have the same experiences. You know, she's especially feeling her compassion for Yashoda because she was there. She saw Yashoda, how she responded when Krishna left. So this is inconceivable. This is inconceivable. How the affection for Krishna, which is one, is diverse in all kinds of relationships and results in all kinds of emotions that apparently are sometimes contradictory to one another, clash or seem negative, but none of it is. None of it's negative. And the proof of it, we've already touched on before, but the proof of it is that their absorption in Krishna as a result of all these so-called negative feelings is just deeper, it goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and there's never an end to it. We can never get absorbed enough in Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and he, you know, there's a saying that variety is the spice of life, or variety is the mother of enjoyment, it is said. So how much truer that is, or how much true or even truer that is in the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is not like the Mayavadis think, free from the variety. And here in the material world, we taste the perverted reflection of that variety, and we think that we have to avoid it in order to avoid the suffering that comes from that variety. And therefore we speculate that the spiritual world, which is completely opposite to the material world, you know, it must be free from anxiety, it must be free from suffering, so therefore there must not be any forms there. There must not be any relationships, because look what happens when there are relationships. Look what happens when there are varieties of relationships. I mean, it is just miserable. And that certainly can't be true in the spiritual world. And therefore, the Mayavadi philosophy becomes attractive. Vitaraga vyakroda manmaya mahabhupavita. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. They become... The Mayavadis, they become disappointed, you know, everything they try at, and then finally they take this impersonal philosophy. They become hopeless, and, you know, because they're trying to enjoy themselves materially and they can't do it, so therefore they eventually give up hope and just hurl themselves into, you know, impersonalism, which they think that the solution is to merge into Krishna, and that there's only one thing, and it's undifferentiated, varietyless, inconceivable, unthinkable, untalkable. Of course, they write a lot of books about it, even though it's untalkable and ununderstandable. They write volumes and volumes and volumes of books to describe how it's unthinkable and unspeakable and incomprehensible. But the truth is completely different. The truth is that the spiritual variety is in Goloka Vrindavan is distinct, completely distinct in nature from the variety of the material world. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and mother of invention, mother of pleasure, or the variety is the real mother of satisfaction or pleasure, is the real spice of life. Therefore, the devotees who are actually advancing in devotional service, they like to hear about Krishna. They don't like to hear about just one thing. They like to hear about everything about Krishna. Sometimes we hear from devotees who are supposedly entering into these higher topics that I only want to hear about the gopis. And if you talk about anything else, they cover their ears, or they go away, or they chastise you, or they try to defeat you with all kinds of thousands and thousands of Rasa Shastra shlokas to try to convince you that, no, you shouldn't think about that. You should only think about the gopis. If you think about it, you know, if you take that logic to its conclusion, then according to their idea, the perfection should be that there should just be Krishna and the gopis, and that's it. In the spiritual world, when it evolves to perfection, then there'll just be Krishna and gopis, and nobody else and nothing else. But how can Krishna and the gopis enjoy without the cows and the trees and the flowers and the water and the varieties of seasons and the cowherd boys always trying to, you know, how is that possible? It's not possible. Therefore, the conclusion is that in Braj, even though all these things are going on, and even though all these emotions are true, it's not that the Brajvasis, you know, don't follow cultural variety. It's not that they... I used this example the other day. You know, it's not that Radharani, when she hears that Durvasa Muni is camped out on the other side of Yamuna, that she says, ha, Durvasa Muni? This guy, you know, offended Ambarish Maharaj, and he's this and he's that. And he's not a Braj Bhakta. And, you know, what do we have to do with him? Just forget this guy. No, she runs over there because she's a coward girl. She's a village coward girl. And this is a great sage, sannyasi. And she offers respect. And she goes and she renders service. They want to follow in Radharani's footsteps, and yet they don't want to, you know, associate with anybody but gopis. But that's not the way the gopis are. Anyway, that's another issue, side issue. But so what is Radharani goes over there, serves Devasamuni, and what happens as a result? She gets this benediction, because he is a great sage, he is a great mystic, and she gets this benediction that, you know, whatever she cooks, you know, will become so delicious, and it will make anybody who tastes it completely healthy and full of energy. And there you have it, you know, pure devotional service. You know, she uses that in Krishna service, and it pleases everybody, including Mother Yashoda, to speak of Krishna. So therefore, we shouldn't think that, you know, the Vedic cultural principles are not important when we become to the highest stage of devotional service. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, the varieties are going on, and the cultural etiquettes are maintained. And we're going to hear about the attitudes and feelings and positions that different devotees, you know, take, who have different relationships with Krishna. And even when you see, when you hear about the same pastime being described by one devotee who's in one relationship with Krishna, and the same pastime at the same time being described by another devotee in another relationship, you'll hear two different descriptions. And it's not that, well, Krishna's pastimes are real, Guru. You can't say that this happened or that happened or this couldn't happen. This is due to immature understanding of Krishna's pastimes, which are unlimited, actually. I've gone too long. I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Shri Briya Bhagavatamrita Ki Jai. Shri Sanatana Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premanandi Hari Hari Go Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Let's Gopi, did you want to correct me or chastise me or anything? Help me out about anything that I've said that maybe not correct or okay. Please forgive me again, okay, you give tomorrow. Sure. Don't forget, so we can hear from you. Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna.
Thank you.